David.
I know I said that wrong. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's a lot of begatting. Thank you, Sonny. So we're back in our cycle in the birth phase, but this story is not only about birth, it's also about death, and it's about new life. It's the story of Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz. So it's all in the book of Ruth. A little bit about the book of Ruth. As Christians, we have a different relationship with this book than Jewish people do. We put it in a different place than Jewish people do in, quote, their Bible. So there are at least five different arrangements of the Bible, depending where you are in the different streams of Judaism and Christianity. Think of the Jewish arrangement of the Hebrew Bible this way. There's the core. Now, I mean, they are in line, but the core books are the books of Moses, the Torah. They're the center. That's what you always come back to in Judaism. Beyond that is the prophets. Who are some of the prophets? Isaiah, Elijah, Jeremiah, Amos, Micah. So they're in the next ring. And then the final ring is the writings. So that's where Ruth is in the Jewish tradition, in the writings, with Lamentations, Song of Songs, Psalms, Job, the stories that are not about prophets, particularly. Christians, though, early Christianity had a substantial investment in credentialing Jesus as being connected to the house of David. For the earliest Christian movement, proving that Jesus was part of the lineage of David was part of credentialing and saying why he was important. So when the early Christian church was canonizing or formally setting the organization of the Bible, which again is not done because it's different for Roman Catholics and for the Eastern Church, for Protestants, we put Ruth in with the historical books. So Christianity claims Ruth as a story of history and puts it between Judges and Samuel, suggesting that it happened between the time when the ancient Hebrews were governed by councils versus covered or ruled, I should say, by a king. They have different theological implications depending on where you put them. Now, personally, I like the Jewish version better, no surprise. I don't need Jesus to be a descendant of David to be meaningful, to be powerful. And I like stories that transcend time because for me, they have more weight. Something that can transcend a particular place for me has more of a call on my life. So, what is this story? I'm thinking Amanda knows this story well from doing one of your shadow puppet pieces, I think 2 years ago. But it all starts with a natural disaster, a common one in the Bible. Does anyone remember, or can you guess? Famine. Okay, Bible study's in the house, you guys, so just rest. See if other people have stuff. So there's a famine in the land, in Bethlehem, which means can mean house of bread. There's a famine in the land. So a Hebrew family decides to leave, and they become immigrants to Moab. This family consists of Elimelech, whose name means my God is king, Naomi, whose name means pleasant, Chilion, whose name means consumptive, and Mahon, whose name means was another illness, some other illness or suffering, I forgot. So you can guess maybe what happens next if your children are named consumptive. Death. So this couple has gone, they've taken their children, they're in the land of plenty, and then there's death. Naomi loses her spouse, and she loses her two children, her adult children. Those adult children leave behind spouses of their own. Orpah, whose name means back of the neck, and Ruth, whose name means companion or friend. So what are they going to do? Their spouses are gone. Naomi, at least, is not in the land of her people. What will she do? What will they do? Well, Naomi says, I got to go home. I'm going to have to go back to Bethlehem. And both Orpah and Ruth say, we're going to go with you, mother-in-law. And she says, don't. I cannot guarantee you a future. I cannot guarantee you new spouses. I'm certainly not going to be able to get married, make babies, and have someone for you to marry. It's not going to happen. Go back to your people. So Orpah says, okay, I'll go back to my people. What does Ruth say? It's used in a lot of weddings. Whither thou go, I go. Whither thou goest. Sorry, Nancy. Nancy's going full King James on us right here. So Ruth says this beautiful statement of where you go, I will go. Your land will be my land, your people will be my people, and your gods shall be my God. I'm going to go with you. Side note, this is one of the places where we see that the Hebrew Bible recognizes the existence of multiple gods. Actually, all the Bible does. It acknowledges multiple gods, but says, this God, Elohim, Adonai, Yehuvah, this is the God. So Ruth isn't saying, I believe your God is the only God, but I will set my gods aside, and I will come with you. I will change my religion, as well as my home and my culture, to be with you. So let's sit with that for a minute. Let's say you lost your spouse, your adult children. You lost your home. Where would you go? Who would you choose? Do you like your in-laws? Everyone gets real still because they might be in the room. Who would you choose if you lost everything? Who would take you in? Hopefully someone who loved you. Yeah.
Someone who had room for you.
And has room for you. Yeah. Say that again.
Maybe God will take you in.
And that's where we're going to end up in a lot of this story. But when you've lost your housing, where do you go to find God to take you in? Say that again.
Synagogue.
Synagogue. So in this ancient tradition, maybe a house of learning. This is a pivotal moment in the story. This is a time of profound devastation. Where do you go when you've lost everything? Did any of you go through the flooding in eastern Iowa a few years ago? I know that was a time when a lot of people were scrambling for housing. So, who remembers the rest of the story? It's okay if you don't, because I'm going to tell it anyway. So, they traveled to Bethlehem, Naomi and Ruth. To get food initially, Naomi, mother-in-law, sends Ruth out to fields to glean, to get the remaining food that's left behind, because Bethlehem is a community that practices the lessons of the 10 teachings or the 10 commandments. You have to care for the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. You have to have systems in place to take care of people. So Ruth is able to go out and glean and get food. But there are also these systems from Leviticus about how you handle inheritance and how you handle larger family needs. And so Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, Ruth, go to this man whose land you've been gleaning on, Boaz. He's kind of related to us. He could be what is called a kinsman redeemer. Go to him while he's drunk, sexually coerce him, and then he will take care of us. So she does. So Ruth does that. She seduces Boaz while he's drunk. Boaz, instead of beating her, killing her, rejecting her, says, okay, I'm going to take you on. I'm going to take you on, Ruth, and your mother-in-law, Naomi. There is a little bit of legal wrangling involving a sandal to make sure that Naomi can claim the land that was hers through her late husband, but that she can't own herself. Ruth marries Boaz. They have a baby. The community rejoices. The women of the community go to Naomi and say, oh, this daughter-in-law of yours is better than seven sons. Seven being the number of perfection. She is more perfect than any son could be to you. Oh, a child has been born to Naomi. She didn't give birth to that child. But they're saying, this is a child of Naomi's line. Let us celebrate. Let us rejoice. Is this a happy ending? Is this a happy birth story? Why, Neil? What's happy about it?
The baby is immediately in a loving network
So, Neil, thank you. I love that. I love Neil's interpretation. Yes, because here's a baby born into an entire community of people who've chosen each other. That is precious. Would that all of our children were born into communities where people rejoice and say, I'm going to care for this kid all the days of their life. Is there any sorrow in this ending, in this birth? A little bit, Krista?
Because that baby is actually Ruth and Boaz, but they don't get to raise that baby. It's their own.
Yeah, there's this question of whose baby is this? So it says that Ruth puts the baby on Naomi's lap to care for the child. Does this mean that she's giving the baby up? Or simply saying, yes, this is your child as well? The text leaves it open, because the women are celebrating that this is Naomi's child. So yeah, if they're giving their baby away to continue Naomi's line, that is a powerful grief. If you had lost everybody, and then a new baby was born, would that assuage all of your grief? So they found this outcome for themselves. But there's still the ghosts with them, the grief. What is it about Naomi, you think, that inspired Ruth to do all of this? Ruth gave up her land, she gave up her gods, she used her body and married someone that she was instructed to marry. What about Naomi could have inspired that? I asked Sonny and Hannah both before the service, if their mother-in-laws told them to do that, what would they do? There was not a response of course. Their family. So something in the years leading up to this disaster had bonded them so powerfully that this is the choice Ruth could make. Because remember, she could have stayed home. Nancy?
I was just going to say love.
Oh, Nancy, love. Love. Yeah, I mean, Ruth could have come from a shady family. Charles? God's family is diverse, and it goes back to Moses, who married someone who was outside of the faith. This story is typically used to describe the Hebrew word hesed, which is spelled in English H-E-S-E-D or C-H-E-S-E-D. Hesed. I'm not even going to really try. You could probably do it better than me, Jason. There you go. Hesed is the idea in Judaism and in the Hebrew Bible of God's loving kindness. God manifesting God's self through each other. Because where was God in this story? No burning bush, no signs, no prophet, no words from God. God didn't need to show up in this story because Naomi and Ruth and Boaz were manifesting God for each other. Not in a clean, sparkly, saintly way, right? There was sex and manipulation involved. But these people demonstrated God's loving kindness to each other. They together found a holy way out of no way. Not only to birth a future for Naomi and Ruth, but to birth a future for the whole people. They birthed a future for the whole people. That's why when I was in seminary, I told one of my professors that I would skip the begats, and then I got a big old lecture, because the begats are telling you something important. For example, one of the names in there, Perez, is a horrible person, and yet is one of the lineage of David. these women who did what they had to do to demonstrate loving kindness to each other, Boaz, who received them as they were, demonstrating loving kindness, begat a future for a people. They birthed a redemption. This is a story about birthing redemption. This is a story about people who can't stay with that work. So we had Orpah. Not everyone can stay in the redemption story. And Orpah's not judged. She makes the choice she does. And a story, too, about the people who stay with an immediate redemption story. As much as this is a story about loving kindness, I think it's also about what are we birthing together? Who are we showing up for as people of doubt and faith? Who are we showing up for in our lives? Who are we committing ourselves to in the face of disaster? How are we showing up for the bees and the trees who we need to prevent famine? Who are we showing up for? And who is showing up for us? I don't know about you, but hitting 700,000 COVID deaths. In the morning service, we played a video of I'll Fly Away, and it said to commemorate the 350,000 COVID deaths. Oh, boy, were we innocent then at 350,000 deaths. 700,000 COVID deaths. Our hospitals full, little kids getting sick. Our school board election is just a nasty fight. There's all this carnage at our southern border, wars, famine, flood. How much hope are you able to muster on a day-to-day basis? How often do you question, where is God in this? How is God making a home for me today and for those people who are suffering? Maybe the invitation in today's story is to just birth enough faith in each other that we will have a future. Maybe the invitation today is to birth enough faith in ourselves, right? How powerless can we feel? These systems we're up against are huge, but what can I do today for Nick? What can I do today for Nancy? What is Jan going to do for me today? In loving kindness, in an expression of the divine. Maybe the invitation today is to birth enough faith in God's holy presence in us that we will be the redeemers of our shared future. Amen.